Diamantina. A human story from Northwest Queensland.
Inspector Bonaparte's investigations in the Diamantina aeroplane mystery are now complete. John Kane and Owen Oliver have been arrested, and at the last moment, Muriel Markham, the paralyzed girl, was saved from death by the diagnosis of Illawalli, the Aboriginal chieftain. The Coolibah household and guests are now gathered in the lounge of the homestead to hear Boney's explanation of the mystery.
Well, Dr. Knowles, how is Miss Markham today?
Much better, thanks, Boney. She's going on very well indeed.
Splendid.
Now, Boney, before you leave us, you really must tell us everything.
Yes, Boney, come along now. I tried to pump Sergeant Cox, but he clapped that stubborn jaw of his and refused to speak.
It wasn't my business, Mr. Nettlefold.
First of all, who is this Muriel Markham?
Mr. Nettlefold, there is no such person.
What? My dear Boney, what on earth do you mean? You saw my reports from Adelaide?
Yes, Sergeant, I did. But her real name is Muriel Kane.
Good heavens, Kane.
Yes. Surely you, Mr. Nettlefold, will remember Mr. Markham, who was once a solicitor in Golden Dawn.
Why, yes, but that was many years ago. He left just after the war.
That is right, 1921. You may not have been aware of the fact, but old Mr. Kane had a positive mania for making wills.
Yes, I know that. He got both his sons out of his will more than once. Charles and John were always in and out of favor with the old man.
Did you know Charles Kane, the younger son, Mr. Nettlefold?
Oh, yes. He created quite a stir in the district when he eloped with the local schoolteacher, Miss Pickett.
Quite. Muriel Kane is the daughter of Charles and a schoolteacher.
Well, I'm blessed. Do you mean to tell me that pretty girl upstairs is the daughter of Miss Pickett?
Mrs. Kane, please, Father.
Why, that makes John Kane her uncle.
Exactly.
What a shocking crime, then. What was the motive, Boney?
The usual motive, Mr. Nettlefold. Money. You see, although old Mr. Kane was so fond of drawing up wills, he had not the same love of destroying them. When he died, there were two wills in existence, the most recent being made out in favor of Charles.
But Charles was killed in a motor accident before that.
Yes, so was his wife. Therefore, the whole property of Tintaroo reverted to Muriel.
I see. But why didn't she inherit it?
Because Mr. Markham, the solicitor, has been rather clever about manipulating those wills. Well, I forgot to tell you that after the death of her parents, Muriel was adopted by Mr. and Mrs. Markham.
Then that's how she became known as Muriel Markham?
Yes. When old Mr. Kane died, his son John was faced with absolute poverty, as he was entirely left out of the will. However, Mr. Markham went to him, produced her previous will, which left everything to John, and agreed to withhold the latter will for a certain consideration.
Bless my soul, I'd no idea Markham was that kind of a solicitor. Why, my affairs were in his hands, too.
Well, I would not describe him as a crook. He was simply, looking after his own interests.
Well, that's a nice thing to hear from a detective, I must say. How much did he get out of it?
$1,000 a year. And unlike most blackmailers, Markham was satisfied with this amount. That is why the secret never leaked out. When he died in 1927, this pension, shall we call it, was transferred to his wife.
Then Mrs. Markham was also in the secret.
Yes, poor woman. It was practically the only money her husband left her.
Of course. Mrs. Markham died on the 2nd of October, 26 days before the crime was committed.
Yes. On her deathbed, she told Muriel the whole story. She knew that with her death, the pension would cease, and so she gave Muriel the two wills.
So the girl decided to come up here and see John Kane. Is that right, Boney?
Yes, Miss Elizabeth. First of all, she wrote to Mr. Kane, telling him that she knew the whole story and suggested to him that he give her half his estate. A very generous offer, I think, seeing that she could easily have claimed the whole in a court of law.
Very generous indeed. I wouldn't have done that.
No, Elizabeth, I don't believe you would.
Oh, Father.
Mr. Kane replied, expressing his gratitude for her suggestion, and she suggested that, as he was in poor health, she should visit him at Tintaroo. He told her he would send a neighbor to meet her at Broken Hill with a car.
Owen Oliver?
Yes.
But how did Owen Oliver come to be mixed up in this affair? He had no interest one way or the other, had he?
Oh, yes, he did. He was a very easy tool for Mr. Kane. You see, Oliver had always been a wild spendthrift, and more than once had found himself in trouble with creditors. After a while, he had exhausted every possible channel and was unable to borrow further. Then he went to John Kane and confided his troubles to him, telling him that he was...
Look here, Kane, I'm in a bit of a mess.
What's the trouble now, Owen?
Oh, same old thing, debts. Those confounded chaps I owe money to are kicking up a fuss, and they've told me that unless I stump up by the end of the month, they'll go to father.
Well, and what are you going to do?
Haven't the faintest idea.
Can you pay?
No. Of course, the old man will kick me out when he hears. He threatened to once before.
You're a fool then, Owen. Haven't you more sense than to fall into debt like this? I suppose you want me to help you. That's it, isn't it?
Well, yes.
How much is it?
£1,500.
What? You silly young ass. I'm afraid there's nothing I can do.
You've got to help me, Kane.
Of course, I'd never see the money again. But would you promise to do anything I asked if I gave you the money?
Yes, anything.
All right. I need some help anyway. If you do exactly as I say, and I'll expect loyalty from you, I'll give you $5,000.
$5,000? What are you asking me to do?
Shut the door and I'll tell you. But you must give me your solemn oath never to talk of this again.
And so, with the determined and unscrupulous lieutenant in Owen Oliver, Kane was ready to put his plan into operation. Captain Lovacre's air circus was in Golden Dawn on the day of Muriel Kane's arrival, and so Mrs. McNally and the rest of the Tintaroo staff were sent into town to see the fun. The house was empty when John Kane entertained his two guests to breakfast. Kane made pleasant conversation to his niece.
It's queer to think of you, Muriel, as my niece. And to think that I've never seen you before.
Yes, Mr. Kane.
Oh, please, I think Uncle John would sound much more friendly.
Oh, all right, Uncle John.
Will you have some of this fish? I can thoroughly recommend it. It's good, isn't it, Oliver?
Yes. Oh, yes, Kane.
Yes, I'll try some, please. Oh, that's plenty, thanks. Aren't you having any?
No, I'm not very hungry this morning. I may have some later on.
I'd like to have a talk with you in private afterwards, Uncle John.
Of course, my dear.
It's about Grandfather's will. I've brought a copy of it with me, so that there should be no argument about its being genuine.
Splendid. But never mind about that now. We'll have plenty of time later. Eat up your fish, my dear. You must be hungry after your long journey.
Yes, I am. But I'm very anxious to... Oh, anxious to...
Hello. What's the matter? You look ill, Muriel.
Yes. I can't eat anymore. Oh, the pain in my side. I can't...
I say, what's happened to her? She's fainted.
Pick her up, Owen. We must carry her out of the room.
Kane, what have you done? You haven't killed her?
No, she's all right. Drugged, that's all.
Drugged? But how?
Never mind now. I put something in the fish. It's something the Aborigines use to poison fish in their water holes. She's all right. She's only paralyzed.
You swine, Kane.
Come on, help me to carry her. Don't forget your promise. Darn it, it's worth that $5,000 I gave you, isn't it?
Muriel Kane, drugged and helpless, was then taken to a deserted hut on Windy Creek Station. The same night, John Kane went into Golden Dawn, stole the red monoplane, and flew back to the hut. Muriel Kane was strapped into the cockpit. And then, near Emu Lake, John jumped out with a parachute and left the machine to crash.
Fortunately, it made a perfect landing, as we know. Otherwise, the young lady would never have been seen again, and the criminals would never have been brought to book.
Exactly, Sergeant. Now, when your successor arrives...
Successor? What, you're not leaving us, Sergeant?
I don't know anything about it.
Perhaps I have been a little premature. However, Sergeant Cox will certainly be leaving the district for a more important post as soon as I can arrange matters with my chief.
Congratulations, Sergeant. You certainly deserve promotion, all right.
Thanks, Mr. Nettlefold, but it hasn't happened yet, you know.
Now, I do not think there are any more explanations necessary. Has anyone any questions to ask?
Yes, I have.
Well, Dr. Noggs?
What made John Kane decide in such a spectacular way to get rid of Muriel? There are plenty of other more simple ways of committing a murder.
Yes, that is the question I ask myself. But Mr. Kane is a somewhat abnormal type. He always had a craving for excitement, and I have no doubt an aeroplane flight and the subsequent parachute jump appealed to his adventurous mind.
He must be completely without nerves.
He is. It seems a pity that such courage and initiative were wasted in this way. Now, Doctor, suppose we paid your patient a visit. Miss Kane, I have come to say goodbye.
Oh, Boney, you aren't going to leave us yet?
I am afraid I must. The call of duty, you know. It haunts me everywhere.
You're looking so much better, my dear. We might even let you get up in a day or so.
Oh, I hope so, Charles. I'm getting so tired of lying here in bed.
I understand from Dr. Knowles that I have to congratulate you, Miss Kane.
Oh? What about?
I trust you will not fail to send me at least one crumb of your wedding cake.
Oh, Boney. How did you guess?
I am a detective, Miss Kane. There is nothing that Boney does not know. Miss Nettlefold, may I have a word with you?
Of course.
And you, Tetchell? Why, yes. You have already met Ilawale, I think.
Yes, Boney. We've been talking long time last night.
Good. Now, as a special favor, I want you to read me the white fellow's mind, Ilawale.
Oh, I'll do it for you, Boney. Mr. Sharp, give me your hand.
All right.
You've been come to Coolabah many year ago, eh? You've been find a nice young white girl. Bye-bye, you tell her you love her, and she say no. She no understand her own heart.
Ella Wally, please.
One day, your father's brother, him been die, and you have 2,000-3,000 quid. Then let her come, and you tell him father him die too, and leave you all his money. The lawman him come to Gunner's Hotel and make you sign papers.
Well, I'm blessed. How did you know that?
I read them your mind. Then you been thinking you buy big fellow station and pretty cattle. You asked station fellows in Brisbane to buy guards from Mr. Kane. Then you been reckon you got him home for white girl so you can marry her.
Ted, is this true?
Yes, Elizabeth.
Oh, I'm so sorry, my dear. To think that I suspected you of something underhand.
It wasn't your fault, Elizabeth, dear.
Boney, do you mean to tell me Ilawale really read all that in Ted's mind?
No, Miss Nettlefold. I have a confession to make, too. I am afraid I told Ilawale what to say.